notion of the forum this evening is to talk, what is it about Christmas that has this mixed result for people? I'm sure you all know people who have a wonderful Christmas and come out of it glowing like Rudolph's nose. Other people who go into Christmas and immediately get depressed and stressed out. Is that part of, just part of the process, or is this something we can do something about? We thought that we might share experiences tonight. We'll talk about the best Christmas you've ever had, the worst Christmas you've ever had, or something else if you want to. I've assembled an absolutely world famous panel here this evening. I picked them out because it seems to me there are people who are very well qualified to help us think about these problems a little bit, taking them from my right to my left and identifying them for those of you who already know them at least as well or better than I do. This is Richard Anderson over here, staff coordinator in the village. Richard is a pastor, and he's also trained in pastoral counseling, which is the reason I picked him out. He must bump into this problem occasionally. Jackie Rollsman.
Good.
That's pretty good. Mm-hmm. Also on staff, Narnia, post office. That I think
no, written from actually programming.
Programming. Okay. Jackie is a nurse, a registered nurse. She's also a nurse practitioner. She's also a therapist. And that's what led me to ask her to sit in with us this evening. Andra Fioni is the village nurse. When she's out in the flatland, she's a nurse practitioner, working primarily with children, I believe. By this time, all of you have met Dan Erlander. I suspect if you haven't, you've been fortunate. Dan is one of the chaplains at Pacific Lutheran University, and of course, he's helping us with our Bible studies this week. I've asked each one of these people to say just a few words about how they see Christmas as a, shall I say, a psychological event in life, or as well as a spiritual event in life. What is it that creates this mixture of feeling blessed and feeling stressed at the same time? The reactions. Shall we go the same direction? Okay.
I wrote down some notes. And I'm going to read them and go through them fairly quickly because I promised I wouldn't do more than about 2.5 minutes. I think some of the reasons people get depressed around Christmas time, and in counseling and therapy work I've done, it tends to increase during those days. One of the reasons I think is that a lot of people overwork during the holidays. If you're in business, many businesses make it through the year by working like crazy through the holidays. And a lot of people simply overdo it. I think a lot of people over-prepare just for the holidays by all the shopping and the Christmas cards and the cooking and the parties and everything else that goes on. And you tend to overextend yourself and basically party too much and work too much and try to do too many things and cram it all into a month. And it can get to you after a while. I think another reason people get down and depressed about Christmas is that they've never let go of their childhood expectations about Christmas. Christmas, for me as a child, was absolutely glorious. It's never met up to that since. And it wasn't until I realized that Christmas is not going to be the way it was when I was a child, and it's different every year. And I've got to change my expectations of what it's going to be, or I'm going to constantly be disappointed that Christmas got better for me. I think a lot of people keep hanging on to hoping it's going to be the way it used to be. A lot of people get depressed around Christmas because it costs too darn much money. And you don't dig your way out till the middle of February, and then you're in the middle of the Epiphany slump, and you stay depressed all the way through until Easter time. One of the reasons that I don't like Christmas is the commercialization of it. The demand to buy, the demand to spend money, the demand what I call the materialistic oppression of our society. And it's especially difficult, at least in my experience, having three children who watch television, to try and go into Christmas and provide a Christmas for them that's meaningful and doesn't meet up to the same vast, expensive amount of toys and junk that their friends get. Another thing I think that's real depressing is that around Christmas time for people, it may be the first time that they've gone through this Christmas without what they had last year. A very significant other person that's died, a family that they're no longer with, a job or something else that was important that they've lost, Christmas traditions that have changed and no longer are what they used to be, a divorce, separation, a lot of things that aren't like they used to be, that, and especially when it used to be pleasant and now you don't have that. And so going through Christmas for the first time after your spouse has died, it's a difficult time. And I think repeated times like that bring back those kind of memories. And so Christmas every year, when your spouse is no longer there or your children are no longer around, is different than the way it used to be and can be quite disappointing. Two other things I think, and I've already out of time. Two other things I think that affected a lot is that if you're from an alcoholic family, or you have anybody in your family who's chemically impaired in some way or another, Christmas is real threatening. There's lots of chemicals around the Christmas season. There's a lot of drinking. There's a lot of chance for more drunkenness. There's a lot of chance for exposure of so-and-so laying around under the Christmas tree drunk or whatever else happens at those time of year. And a lot of the family members would just rather avoid the whole thing and have it all come out and live through it again. Or Christmas brings back those kind of memories. Another thing I think for adults is Christmas can be dreaded if you feel obligated or decide to go back to your family, and you maybe came from an alcoholic family or a dysfunctional family, and you're just going back to that situation again, and you know you're going to spend Christmas Day with Dad sitting around drunk, or Mom and Dad fighting, or whatever is going on, and you'd rather avoid it. And I think Christmas also has its opportunities for people a lot of times to just decide life isn't worth it. We see a lot of suicide attempts, and a lot of people tend to not wrestle well with the dichotomy between this is supposed to be a wonderful time and I feel terrible and rotten, and everyone else is having Christmas cheer and I feel horrible. So what's the use? And a lot of people attempt to commit suicide. Okay, that's a few thoughts.
So far it sounds like we ought to vote to cancel. I can identify with all those points, but some of them I've known in my life. Becky?
Most of my professional work has been in the area of chemical dependency and working with individuals with that as well as family members. And for me, I think using the addiction model for a lot of ways to look at things, I, like Rich, kind of believe that Christmas has come to almost represent one of the forms of intoxication. With our consumerism, one of the many isms like alcoholism and valiumism or cocaineism or whatever our particular drug of choice is. And I guess from my own experience, it's working with individuals who have either been, you know, treated for their chemical dependency, and Christmas may represent a difficult time to remain in recovery, and the potential for relapse is high. Or they may still be practicing and in their disease, at which point the pain is probably greatly increased for those people around them. And the other area of work, probably as Rich alluded to, for me has been working with adults who were children growing up in alcoholic families and or dysfunctional or high stress of some kind, and knowing the power that certain family rituals have for our memory and our growth and development makes Christmas, you know, high on the list for a powerful kind of memory. I'll share a personal experience as well. I grew up in a family in the Midwest, and my father started suffering depression probably about when I was in the fourth grade, and then had a series of hospitalizations probably up until I was a freshman in college. And I have a very, there was one particular Christmas when he was hospitalized. I don't recall that there was more than that, but I can remember visiting the VA hospital in St. Cloud, Minnesota, which was probably a good 4-hour drive on Christmas Day, visiting him at a point when he was probably the most ill that I had ever seen him, and had a series of shock treatments. And in, I don't know what the VA hospital system is like now, but at that time, all of the patients wore like these blue coveralls. And I remember very strongly going in there to visit him on Christmas Day. And my father was a smoker, and friends back from church and relatives, you know, sent gifts like packages of cigarettes, and you gave them to him. And my dad at that point, sorry to say, was actually pretty catatonic and really unable to even, communicate at that point. He's in a good recovery now. The story has got a good ending, but that's a real powerful memory for me. There was another Christmas when he was ill, but he was at home, when I recall that we were not, we chose not to buy a Christmas tree. That was kind of my mom's decision. And my older brother, feeling pretty protective of family tradition, because many Christmases before that had been very happy and very good, chose to go and spend his own money to buy this Christmas tree. And I mean, the story is still told in our family that of seeing my older brother drag this Christmas tree across our lot all the way from the nursery about a mile across town. And so I think we underestimate sometimes the power of those memories in our development and attitudes about Christmas. And I guess I'm particularly interested in how those affect our spirituality, how they affect our maybe ideas about Christmas and the incarnation of God in our life with that particular association with the whole tradition of Christmas. I'll share an interesting kind of research tidbit for what it means in terms of family life. I've always been real interested in the familial tendency of alcoholism. It tends to run in families, and that doesn't make alcoholism genetic, but it's certainly, just like speaking in French runs in families, but that doesn't mean it's genetic, in French families anyway. But there tends to be a real, real high rate of familial carry-on in alcoholism. There's always the nature versus nurture controversy. Is it because it's biological or is it psychological or whatever? And up to a point, it's really fallen quite heavily in the biological realm. But there is some interesting research that's been done back east that's shown that in families where the rituals are maintained from one generation kind of to the next, in other words, where even though alcoholism and stressful family illnesses or conditions are happening, if the family still tries to maintain rituals like birthdays are celebrated, vacations are taken, holidays are remembered, and those are strongly take place despite the disruption of a chronic condition like cancer or other kinds of high stressful kinds of things, it seems like the alcoholism is not carried on as great in those families as it is in families where those rituals are not maintained. This would make a lot of sense in explaining why Jewish families tend to have lower rates of alcoholism. That's changing now, but because the Jewish family, as you know, gives a very strong message in condoning or not condoning drunken behavior, and they also are very strong in maintaining their rituals, and alcohol is associated with, you know, the ritual of celebration. So there's something to be said about, you know, how we celebrate rituals as a family, and Christmas being a really strong one, what that does to our own growth and development, and especially our spiritual development and ideas about our faith. So I think it's kind of an unexplored area.
I had some encounters with some children in the village today. They came up for a variety of things, including bug bites and scrapes and just a variety of different things. It was fun today because each one of them, as I was tending to whatever their need was, I was able to ask say to them, Merry Christmas. And each time they knew, of course, that Christmas was happening here, this Christmas in July phenomenon. And they looked at me and each one of them defiantly said, it's not Christmas. I said, we're never celebrating Christmas in July. We had this little bantering back and forth. Well, no, it is. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. No, it isn't. And I said, well, how come it's not Christmas? And you could all guess what the answer was for those children. It's that Santa Claus wasn't coming and they weren't getting any presents to them. That gave me a lot to think about in terms of how are we including children in Christmas in July at the village, and maybe we could give some thought to that next year. But also, what are we teaching our children about Christmas? And what are we teaching about Christmas to our children for the sake of, as Rich earlier said, for creating a glorious Christmas for ourselves. The most immediate Christmas that comes to mind, my rather short-term memory is last Christmas, where I was working in a therapeutic child care center for children who are abused and neglected. Our children were all poor, and they were of mixed races. They all had a history of being abused and neglected. Our agency, in order to get money for the agency to run, is forced on one hand to do lots of publicity. So we had many, many articles in the Seattle Times about our agency. Part of that was the Seattle Fund for the Needy. We were part of that group. We're also, this was all at Christmas time, so you see these abused and neglected children on the news in the front of the newspaper, and then I would, at the same time Christmas was happening in the center, and of course it was a fairly secular event in our center. One of the things that we did for the children and for the children's family was get volunteers or get generous people to give our children Christmases. And so every day I would walk into the office and I would see the office overflowing, literally. The office, the conference room, the boardroom overflowing with presents for children. It was the most disturbing Christmas I have ever had, and I still am so angry about it, I can barely even talk about it. The children are relatively disturbed to begin with, and then at Christmas time when we had Santa Claus come every day. Now, how would you respond to Santa Claus coming into your house or your school or your life every single day? For weeks. I mean, this went on for weeks. We had Santa Claus coming. We had people touring. We had decorations. We had music. We had celebrations every day, every day, every day, every day. Plus, we had all these gifts. Some of them were, in my opinion, okay gifts. Others were, in my opinion, very violent, horrible gifts. I would never think of giving a child a gun at Christmas time, or even a G.I. Joe, but these aggressive, violent children would get those kinds of gifts. So Some of them would get from families very many gifts, others would get more modest gifts. And so as we distributed the gifts among the children, they would see the discrepancy between the many gifts and the not so many gifts. It really made for me a very difficult Christmas, a Christmas in which I began to really dislike generous people who for whatever reason, to make themselves feel good, to be benevolent at Christmas time, to help children. It made me very much dislike the whole system of giving in our society and what that means. Do we feel like more spiritual people when we give more? Why is it that we give only at Christmas time, and why are the food banks in Seattle probably close to empty right now, and these same children who had more gifts than they could even want at Christmas time are now probably unable to even find those toys, let alone play with something valuable or a good toy. So that gave me much pause for reflection this Christmas, and I think it probably made my Christmas a more spiritual one, because I thought more about what Christmas meant for me, what I want it to mean for the children that I commit myself to in the world. And it brought back many memories today that I reflected on the children here and the children there and the differences in their Christmases.
Yeah. Reflecting on a sad Christmas and a happy Christmas, probably the saddest Christmas was the first Christmas of our marriage, where Karen had no idea what pastors are like on Christmas Eve. Joyfully went around through the day getting ready for a beautiful dinner for our first Christmas as a married couple, and I rushed off to the first service in the Christmas program and the second and the midnight service. And Karen spent most of the Christmas Eve in tears at home. And at the next Christmas, she knew that was part of the program. But it's an example of what, if you're not a pastor, there's all of those expectations and disappointments. Probably the happiest Christmases were up here in the winter community at Holden, and I realized that's an ideal situation because you are removed from the culture. We were able to keep Advent pure. I was even in charge of the Advent police. I can't sure nobody celebrated Christmas during Advent. But the joy of Advent and quiet preparation, and then the 12 days of Christmas. Please stop singing the songs. We can talk about the joy of Christmas. there's just the memories, like that hook up in the ceiling right in that corner holds the top of the Christmas tree in place, which is always a tree that reaches up to the top, and this room is dark and the candles are lit and just white Christmas on that tree. And it brings back, I think, memories of, and what it was Christmas with separated from the culture. And after leaving Holden, making some vows about Christmas, I give myself just one time at a shopping center. I just refuse to get, and I turn off the TV during Christmas. I don't want any of those commercials. Mm. And I know this is harder when you have children, and it's somewhat of an ideal situation. I'm not good at making things, I'm not good at finding the time to make things for presents, so that adds to the pressure. So I just sit down one afternoon with my Lands End and do my Christmas shopping.
That's expensive.
I know. Or some of the catalogs. I want to say a few opinions, and it might be just to get a discussion going. I think Christmas in our culture there's just some words I like to just say about it. I think it's sick. I think it's gross. I think it's a materialistic binge. I think it's heathen. I think Santa Claus, who is once a Christian saint, is the absolute antithesis of the Christian faith, represents heretical doctrines that are against everything we talk about as grace. I'm thankful that I never was raised to believe in Santa Claus. I think it's an idolatry. And I think we should name Christmas what it is, and that is a heathen winter festival of an unchristian culture. And that we do participate in, I mean, there's no way we can't participate in somewhat. But to name it as the winter festival of our society. And then if I had my way, we'd move the celebration of the incarnation of Jesus back to January 6th, Epiphany. Then as a church, we would have our celebration then, after everybody had kind of done the cultural winter festival thing and kind of got that out of their system, then we'd say, hey, now let's, as a family of faith, I'll celebrate Christmas. I know that's not realistic.
Why not? Why not?
I don't know.
Because you don't have children at home.
No, it's children. The commercial people, I think, they know how to captivate children. And I know they sit and, I think they sit and plan this. It's carefully calculated how to captivate children and really take children away from the values of their parents. And I think there should be a massive protest in some kind of what we allow our cultural media people to do to us. I have some feelings about this, I guess. That's all I'll say. That brings up any discussion.
I hadn't meant to tell a pastor story about Christmas, but since you raised what the pastor does on Christmas, I will. Mm-hmm. It was 43, I guess, the first year that I was overseas in the Second World War. It was Christmas Eve. I was in China. Beautiful full moon. We should have expected trouble. We usually got hit when the moon was full and the night was bright. But we were going to have a Christmas service, and so we went in the building, and we had our chaplain who was helping us. And we had just sung the first verse of Silent Night, Holy Night, when we caught a stick of anti-personnel bombs at the rear of the chapel. We hadn't heard the airplanes coming in, and they were bombing our field. And I remember the pastor very clearly. He was always a pastor. There was the instant of silence, surprise. And then the pastor said, well, there will only be one verse. Well, we raise a fascinating problem here, I think. Is it possible to do, perhaps as Dan was suggesting, to decommercialize Christmas? Maybe leave the holiday. It serves a good function. And maybe it serves a good function.
You know, societies need holiday, you know.
Sure. And move Christmas, if not to the 25th of July, why to the 6th of January?
Well, what I'd like to see our churches do, because I'm really with Dan, I think Advent is right up until the 25th of December, and you don't celebrate Christmas before that. And then I cannot figure if we really believe that Christmas starts after the 25th of December, why do the churches have all their concerts in the busiest season competing with everybody else? And I've tried to ask if maybe our music committee could possibly schedule a Christmas concert during Christmas. And I haven't had any takers. But instead of planning it so early in the season, I think it would be wonderful if we couldn't get a Christmas concert happening the first week in January. But, you know, you'd have all the time in the world, and you could really sit and enjoy it. And I don't know why, maybe in the church, we couldn't start a movement to celebrate Christmas during Christmas. And in the family, we really stress the Advent. And our TV is too usually on, and in Seattle Channel 9 is a pretty good one. And that's what it's pretty much limited to. There's advertising, but not of the same kind. But I think we can help reinforce each other, maybe. You know, slide our season, into our calendar.
Glenn?
Yeah. I don't feel as negative as you do. I think Christmas is an incredible struggle. However, for example, in the gift giving, I think that if you have the opportunity to give a gift, if there's some way to get the notion out of children, at least to some extent, you can't get it completely away. But if you have a chance to give a child a gift or someone else a gift, anytime, you give the gift. So that it's not always associated with Christmas. You give the gift, you know, when it becomes available. I have some very wonderful memories of Christmas and some very wonderful struggles. But I'll just give you a couple. One of them that popped into my mind, Fran decided to not do the regular Christmas play and involve the junior high kids in a play. Is it called The Carrington Bunny?
Yeah.
And did a cannibal.
We did a mime.
A mime, I mean, of The Carrington Bunny as the Christmas play.
And they never asked me to do a Christmas play. In fact, people told me next year we're going to have Mary and Joseph.
It was absolutely beautiful. It's a memory that I'll never forget. Not only because my daughter was in it, but because it was done extremely well and had really the Christmas, very strong Christmas story associated with it in a different light.
A lot of people didn't like it because the little kids didn't get to dress up like angels.
Sure.
And same for the video thing.
And so that was one memory that I had. And another thing, we don't have a television, by the way. Something I would recommend that you do. We haven't had a television for over 4 years. And in response to the media, yeah, the media sure gets gung-ho at Christmas time, but the media is gung-ho all year long with propaganda. So, I don't know. I have mixed feelings. Oh, I was going to say, the one struggle that, and there is a tremendous struggle, and at least for my children, in terms of getting the real idea of Christmas in at times, although I can get folders in. One time that I felt was really good, was really neat, was when we started reading the gospel. I think it was about 20 days, 25 days before Christmas. It's gradually built up to the birth of Christ, kind of on a daily basis. By the time it got to be Christmas, I really, it was really Christmas for us. So it's happened. But it is a struggle.
Other reactions about your best and worst Christmas?
I have one thing against Christmas. And I think it's parents that have children married. They always expect their kids to come home to Christmas. And these poor kids are trying to set a tradition in their own family, and they're running home to Christmas. Then they gotta go to this house, then they gotta go to that house, and by the time they get home, their kids have nothing to remember. I see my kids maybe once every 4 years at Christmas. You got your tradition, you stay home, you do it, I don't want you running home every Christmas, you're exhausted. And this just grassy, well, he didn't come home. I said, there's a telephone. I mean, these kids have got their own lives, let them live it. Sure, I want to see my kids as well as their kids, but they're not enjoying the Christmas of their own. They're not bringing their kids up in any traditions. It just infuriates me.
6th of January will do just as well.
Yeah. Be happy they get home once every 3 years.
In 1976, my wife selected Stehekin as a visiting place on our first vacation together. We'd been married 4 years. And I thought, oh boy, a boat ride up a lake is just what I like. You know, 55 miles on a boat. Up to the end, and he can at the end of it. We got to Chelan and got on the boat and went to Stehekin and met a man that just changed our whole lives together, Paul Bergman. Paul Bergman was Stehekin in a number of ways. And he was impaired. He couldn't talk because of cancer. And I think because he couldn't talk, he could write, and he would write his responses. So I have stacks of little pieces of paper that he wrote responses on at home. There was an instant love affair. There's no other way to explain it. It just happened instantly between him and my wife and I. And Paul lived in a tar paper shack up in Stehekin for years and years and years. His water source was the stream. He had no electricity. He heated his place with wood in the stove. So anyway, Paul invited us back for Christmas. I live in San Francisco. Well, we left here in August anticipating this incredible Christmas with Paul Bergman in Stehekin. We anticipated this for months. As it got closer and closer to coming, Paul realized we were really going to come. I mean, we really meant that we were going to get the car and go over these mountains and up this river, up this lake, and spent Christmas with Paul. Well, he finally realized there was no way he could entertain us in his shack up in Stehekin. There was just no way he could do that. So he said, come to Holden with me. Now, I had heard about Holden, this church camp up here, you know? Christian church camp. I'm going to spend Christmas Christian church camp. Oh, I can just see it. And I know all these preconceptions of what this is going to be like. And anyway, he met us and brought us over here. And took the snow track ride up through the boat. It was gorgeous. The lake was just incredible. And then this terminal trip up the trail on the snow tracks. And Christmas Eve, several of the staff made, what do they call them, snow candles, ice candles. Mm-hmm. And they filled up, I had never seen them before, but they make little igloos all along the pathway from the dining room down to Koinonia, and just set candles in. And it was a perfect night. I mean, it had been a kind of miserable weather up here. Sometimes in the winter it could get pretty bad. And the sky just opened up. It was just glorious. It was just beautiful. And as Dad said, you know, we came into this building and the place was just a light, a candlelight. And Fritz, can't recall his last name.
Norstad.
Norstad was up here then, and he was the taster for the Christmas service. Sat right there. And I can't recall words. I recall images better than I can recall words. I've always had a hard time with that. Being an artist, I think in pictures. And it was the first Christmas I think I was ever, that ever let Jesus disturbed me. He really shook us up that year. And at the same time, it was just beautiful. The experience renewed our marriage. We renewed our vows without anyone knowing about it, just between the two of us. And we just had to come back here. The following year, we came on staff for a year and a half. And it's been very fun. But that Christmas, that one special. And I knew at the time it was special. I knew it could never be repeated. And that was okay. I think as far as Christmas itself goes, you have to undergo some kind of inner change. You can't escape the culture we live in. I can't escape that. And I don't want to. I like some of it. I really enjoy it. I enjoy the concerts. And when my nieces and nephews open up those gifts, I love the expressions on their face. And I think you need to be in the world, but not of it. We live in this. I don't think it's all that horrible.
Thank you.
Christmases I remember was the first year we were married. Since he wasn't a pastor, didn't have to. No, it was in the establishing a different tradition, traditions of our own, and taking our two traditions and putting them together and coming up with our own Christmas. And it was really special not to go home that Christmas and to start our own tradition.
It does mean something, doesn't it?
My daughter wrote her stepdad a letter before he passed away, and she says she thanked him for letting them do their thing. And we were always behind them, regardless of what they wanted to do. And that is, you know, like Christmas traditions and that. You've got to have your own Christmas traditions. When they come home, then we have ours. But otherwise, one of them is picking up the phone, and whoever picks up the phone has to pay for it first. And if they're not home and they call back, well, that's tough, then they have to pay for it. This is what a big charge at our house.
I think one of the Christmas memories that will always be a part of my memory is a memory from childhood. And I remember it. I mean, I don't grieve over the fact that it's no longer there. And that is this church service that we always had on Christmas Eve. The pastor's family was a busy place, but there was always time for that. And there was a candlelight service, but then at 12 o'clock, when the bell rang, everybody worshiped around the manger, around the altar. And it's that worshipful 10 minutes at 12 o'clock that I will never forget. It's that you begin with the adoration. And I guess I'll never will forget that. It's a part of the memory that I cherish. It's not connected with family. I'm concerned about, you know, the expectations of families too, but it's probably the best memory I have of Christmas at home.
One funny one I'll never forget is when Sarah was four and Nils was born in August, so he was just the right size to be baby Jesus at Christmas. And for the children's Sunday school program, Sunday before Christmas, the adults set up various Christmas scenes in different parts of the churches, and the children went from one to the other, and the story was told with the characters there, and we were Mary and Joseph and baby and up in front of the altar, and they brought all the kids up, and Sarah says, "That's not the baby Jesus, that's Nils." That's what I'll never forget.
You got off well. Our daughter was supposed to be an angel. She found out that the baby Jesus was the center of attraction. She wanted to be Jesus, and we said, "No, you're an angel." Whereupon she sat in the pew like this, and that was it. The best and worst.
How about traditions? I mean, we have a tradition in our house associated with Christmas. We have ornaments that we make every Christmas. So that we have ornaments that Sarah made when she was, she was a year old.
Tradition that we have in our family, we happen to have two of our children who live in town, and each of them has two children, so we have four grandchildren in town. And it's sort of a reaction against Christmas and its busyness. We have a family our big family celebration is the second Sunday in Advent. And that's removed from gifts. It's what Christmas is about. It's centering on the coming. As the children get older, they get to light Advent candles, and it's all done with, it's in the best family, it's the best dinner we can have together. I mean, the children enjoy the fact that it's the white tablecloth and, you know, the old terry cloth that everybody spills on. And that people come dressed up and we glorify the Christ child or the coming of the Christ child. And that's a very special time. And I think that it is setting a tradition which I'm hoping in the family will be removed from the business of the Christmas giving. And it's at least the grandchildren seem to appreciate that as the very special time in that season that's our family time. So I'm hoping it's a tradition that they will remember with centering upon the meaning of the season.
Jay,
yes.
We do the same thing. As I was a youngster growing up, I had my uncles and cousins lived in Shelton, Washington, which is, as you know, if you haven't heard, is the Christmas tree capital of the world. And so we went down there, it became a family of time to go down and pick our tree. And as we grew, obviously that became more difficult. People moved away, we grew and married, and the family got bigger, though we're not huge. I think if you get all of us together throughout the country, there's 30 or 40 of us. However, it became, to me, it wasn't Christmas if I didn't see those people as we scattered. And so now the tradition in our family is on the second Sunday of Advent, we have a family dinner. It started out originally just to be a get-together to have everybody come. The tradition has become now, we come together for an international potluck. The menu is planned, the recipes chosen and sent out, and the only question you ever hear is, are you sure we can find those ingredients in our small town? And we come together with people bringing appetizers and desserts, and those that are closest bring the dessert, and they bring the appetizers because they'll be there early, and those that might be late bring the dessert. And it has gotten so, I will call people in July and say, are we on for this Christmas? And for the second Sunday of Advent. And the only change, it used to be on the second Sunday of Advent, and now it's on the second Saturday, so people out of town can get in and then leave. Everybody makes a real effort, because that is the only time this family comes together. And so where cousins are meeting cousins that they would never meet or know otherwise, and they stay an afternoon. And it turned out that now after one of those Sundays when we share the light and the Advent candle the following Christmas, we discovered that some of our cousins and some of the family had indeed accepted Christ and joined the family of, you know, of the church as well. And it's been a real special time.
I'm kind of wondering, because we do have family close, I'd ask the experts who are here who dealt with stress. There comes a time when we're not going to be here for that celebration. And I keep wondering whether we ought to skip it now and then, or whether we ought to be out of town sometimes, or whether, you know, because the anticipation of doing that every year, whether you ought to wean them away from it or let it go.
I come from a family of, there are six girls, and even though we're far apart in age, we're close together. They're close, and pretty close in distance as well, which helps. But we got together always at Christmas. Then we decided, as the people grew up, married, had children, it was difficult to get together on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day, so we changed it to a convenient day within the Christmas season. It isn't always the same, but it's sometime in the Christmas season. And that tradition has gone on for as long as I can ever remember, and my children really benefit from that. The children of the family entirely benefit from it. They gain strength from the enlarged family. And I don't look at it as just getting together to, you know, so everybody gets gifts. Everybody looks at it as a really important time for family. And without the Christmas season to do this, people, I don't think, put the importance on celebrations, as much importance on other times of the year as they do on Christmas, because Christmas is an important time of the year. We are celebrating Christ's birth. So there's more importance, at least, to get together. And I think it has become a very important time for our children, now grandchildren, and it's beginning to change because my father passed away, my mother's elderly. But I do think that the children, because of the importance that they've learned from this, will continue in some fashion. It may not be the same, but they will continue. And it is very important, and it has become important because we made the effort. And I think it does take effort. It takes lots of coordination, and perhaps people think a little bit of, you know, too much emphasis on gifts and the food and everything, but it still is important, I think.
We have only a few moments left, and I'd like to ask one question. As I listen to the conversation here tonight, it sounds like at least this group, by and large, has had a pretty happy time, mostly at Christmas. I mean, most of the Christmases sound like they were good ones. And yet, when I heard Rich et al. Here, I agree that I know a lot of people who are very depressed and who are near or perhaps even suicidal. And that starts just as Christmas approaches. Why is that? Is that a different crowd?
No. I'm that way, but I just ignore it.
Yeah, you are.
I lost my husband, and Christmas and pets and everything else, and I could just go in a hole and forget about it. But you can't do that.
Yeah.
There'll be bigger, better ones. There'll be other ones.
We have a friend, we have a couple friends actually for whom Christmas is very hard, and they constantly say the expectation that is never realized for them. And you know, you make them a part of the family, and they're in the church, and you just still do the book. You just know that that is a hard time. I don't know what to do about it.
I think another thing for single people, gay and lesbian people, childless couples, and there's so many messages about Christmas that this is a time for happy families. And I think it's a very special time when the church can be family.
It's not any worse than coming up here alone.
Yeah, or divorce. Yeah, divorce people. People experience death and grief.
I encountered my first Christmas without my husband last year. And I was kind of dreading it because it had always been a special time in our home. A lot of it was church connected. Friends in family home if possible. And I thought, what am I going to do? And bit by bit, I learned about people who were alone. A little friend who normally had her family at home, they weren't able to come home this year, so I said, come for dinner. My mom is 85, and I had her down spending several days with me. She had my daughter in. One of our pastors was going to be alone. Her husband was going to California, and of course, she had to remain because of all the activity. So I said, well, Karen, why don't you come have dinner with us if you feel inclined? I said, I don't want to commit you to it. And bit by bit, we ended up with quite a sizable group. And it really helped me bridge the gap. It was, people were alone for various reasons. It wasn't that we were all mourning for the loss of a loved one. And, you know, we bridged the gap, and we had a very wonderful day.
Yeah, but in pain reach out. Yeah. That's what makes it go away.
Any last shot before we depart?
I'd just like to say we spent Christmas here as a family, and the remarkable thing was that our children hadn't seen TV all fall, and so they didn't ask for 1,000 commercial things for Christmas. Well, my wife and I still laugh about the fact that our youngest son was 10 at the time. When we asked him what he wanted for Christmas, I think it was calendar and socks. I think that's wonderful, but I'm not sure what we do when we leave here. We're going to be here next Christmas again, but after that, how do we take that out of here? And that's a real struggle that I know we have to wrestle with. So I think, you know, it's an ongoing practice.
There's a little six-year-old boy here who was trying to convince his parents they should move to Holden Village all year. He says, then you wouldn't have to buy us any toys.
We did solve that problem in one way in the family. We decided anything on TV was not viable as a gift. Whatever was advertised wasn't viable.
That could be hard on parents. I was just thinking of the first Christmas that Jay and I spent that we had a child. And the child had some gifts, all boy. And he opened the first gift, set aside the gift, played with the box, while his mother slowly went crazy. About a week, I think. He opened all of his presents. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been a delightful forum group to work with. We are bound to close when the hour ends. We will close formally, and then if you want to swap some more stories about Christmas, well, that's fine too. Thank you so much for being here.